Hello and welcome to Wonder Pod, episode 51. Yes, we've survived the dreaded 50. Now we're recording 51. Fingers and toes crossed. Gonna be interesting format for you folks tonight. Besides me, it's kind of a new crowd, which I'm really digging, to tell you the truth. Joining us for his third episode that's been recorded is Glacinator.
Hello, everyone.
And new to the crew this week, John Kine 77 of SideQuesting.com.
Hello, hello.
Wow, without Patrick here, the intro goes like really, really quickly. Glacinator.
What is up, everyone? Yeah, there you go.
He does it really well. He's a natural ham. You got to give him that. What have you been playing this week, Glacinator?
I pulled out my old Game Boy Advance, and one of my friends loaned me Advanced Wars. And it's sort of my first sort of like strategy game. And I'm getting pretty into it. I like it a lot. And other than that, just more Little Big Planet with my friend's PS3. That's it.
Sorry, wrong computer. John, what have you been playing this week?
Mostly I've been playing a couple of catch-up games. First being Infamous on PS3. I'm not much of a open world sandbox kind of guy. I've never liked the Grand Theft Auto games, but Infamous has a superhero twist with electrical powers and whatnot, and it's pretty good. I'm playing the good side of the thing, and yeah, I'm enjoying it a lot. It's some of the side missions are pretty tedious, but they're pretty bad. But the main mission stories are quite good. And other than that, playing a bit of 50 Cent Blood in the Sand with my buddy Aaron, some co-op. I don't know if you guys have ever played 50 Cent Blood in the Sand, but it is hilarious. It's just 50 Cent's ego in a game wrapped around Gears of War and Army of Two, maybe. The gameplay is, it's a third-person shooter, of course, and, it's really good, but, you know, the story as such it is, and just the cursing and the utter ridiculousness of it is just fantastic. Have you guys ever played it?
No.
No, I haven't.
I've heard about it.
I thought that I heard more positive things about the second one.
Yeah, this is the second one.
Well, that's why. Yeah, my bad. Because it's funny to me because like I listen to hip hop and rap when I'm at the gym. Because it motivates me, but beyond that, 50 Cent has no bearing in my life. So, I was expecting the ego wrapped in some other kind of gameplay, but I was not expecting the humor. So now that might have to go on the backlog to be picked up out of the bargain bin here some year.
Well, there's just just to give you some idea of the ridiculousness, like when you in the driving missions, when you drive over any ramp. It explodes behind you in slow motion. When you shoot guys, you get points. You get a multiplier, and you get these points that mean absolutely nothing. They're just totally arbitrary, just so that you can get these medals at the end of each level. There's upgradable profanity on the taunt button. There's and you're just driving around with G-Unit, and he's just saying all the most fun, the funniest things. It's just so ridiculous, but we just laugh the whole way through, and I'm not a big hip hop fan, but I do enjoy when it's good, and 50 Cent his stuff's pretty good, so yeah, it's good fun.
Anything besides those two?
I polished off Enslaved, which was a really good game by Ninja Theory. That was hot on the heels of Heavenly Sword. I was waiting to get Enslaved on the cheap, so I played through Heavenly Sword before that, which was cheap. And anyway, Enslaved is kind of like a sci-fi Uncharted with a little more hand-to-hand combat rather than the shooting. And it's good. I don't think anybody bought it, which is the sad thing, but it's a lot of fun. The other game, and Rock Band 3 with my wife, which she loves and I love. And long live Rock Band, because Guitar Hero is dead. Anyway, that's about it.
That was an excellent explanation of Enslaved, but actually, although some people accuse me of doing it to be contrary, it was my game of the year last year.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, it's funny because I bought it because all that artwork and scenery is from the History Channel show Life After People, where they show how buildings decay and degrade 5 years after people, 10 years after people, 15 years after, you know, after all humanity is gone. And I got hooked into watching that show just because it was fascinating to see how things changed and went back to nature and all that stuff. And they used a lot of those same models and same animations in Enslaved. And so it was a no-brainer, and I kind of had it a little low on my list, and then I got a deal on it on Amazon when it was still, like, shortly after release. I got it for like $28 shipped to my house.
That's nice.
So it ended up being a really great deal, and it just, of all the games I played last year, it's hard for me to give any shooter game of the year anymore, just because they're pretty much out of the same franchise and so on and so forth. And so it was close between it and Red Dead Redemption, and it just won me over. I mean, replaying through it, if you get a chance, replay through it again. It's fun even playing through it again.
Well, I when I played Enslaved, I jumped right into hard mode and right away, eh? And I don't know why I did. I just felt like I wanted that kind of a challenge, and because it's hard on hard, and I didn't have any of the upgrades that you can get. I didn't realize it carried over from a normal playthrough, and yeah, I fought and clawed right through the whole thing, and yeah, it was. I enjoyed it a lot.
That last, not to do too many spoilers, although the game has been out for a while, that last boss on the ship must have been a nightmare on hard. I've only beaten him on normal. And isn't there a medium between normal and hard, or is it easy, normal, and hard?
It's easy, normal, hard, yeah.
Okay, I beat him twice on normal. I've never, and then I got distracted by other games, I've never gotten back to trying it on hard. Of course, I'm fully leveled up now, so it might be a little easier.
Yeah, it would be. I wouldn't call it a nightmare, but it was tough. I will say, one thing I will say about Enslaved that really impressed me was the acting and the voice work. Man, oh man. The Ninja Theory really got it down. Heavenly Sword had Andy Serkis and a bunch of other people too, and both games are just beautifully written and acted.
Yeah, well, the story, I haven't played Heavenly Sword yet, but the story in Enslaved got me pretty good. I mean, I was impressed with how they did that. Three characters total. I mean, it was stripped down, simple, and really good.
Yeah, once Piggy came into the picture, it really took off as a really great character-driven action game, you know?
Well, he played the perfect comedic foil. So, I mean, it was just, you know, the scenes where he's, you know, kind of trying to compete with Monkey, you know, just, they're just funny.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, Enslaved is based on, I think it's I think it's Chinese story called Into the West, which is also the source material for Dragon Ball Z. I don't know if you knew that or not.
Oh, yeah, I heard that, and I probably really should track that down and read it, because I really like the story of Enslaved. So, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's in, I think it's Chinese. So, and as for what I've been playing, basically, I finally polished off Elder Scrolls Oblivion. What the heck else did I play? Played a little bit of Aqua, which is, it's an XBLA twin stick steampunk shooter. If you like any of the above, pick it up. I think it's back to 800 points now. I got it on sale for 400, but it's a fun little twin stick shooter, even if you're not really good at them, which I'm not. Fun game. And I don't know why, for the life of me, I just decided that I needed to finish a complete run through of all the Death Knight quests in World of Warcraft, so I went back to World of Warcraft for a little bit. I lasted about 2 days before I got bored and wandered off again. Played some more Minecraft, Angry Birds, and Resident Evil 4 on the iPhone. The only thing I want to say about the iPhone games this week is that it takes you a long time, maybe less for people more coordinated than me, to learn how to use a twin stick on a touchscreen. Now that I am better at it, I'm glad I put the time into it. But for a while there, playing Resident Evil 4 on a touchscreen was a bit challenging. Let's just put it that way. It was curse worthy and curse inducing. Let's see. There was one other. Oh, and then, me and Audio Master G and Pat last night played Left 4 Dead 2 again. We had a little bit of a Rambo run ahead guy follow us. He joined for a little bit. No, it was not Carlos, for those of you that are normal listeners of the show. No, it wasn't. I'm not going to even go into who it was, but it brought into focus again how Left 4 Dead has its flaws, both of them, but it is definitely one of the best teamwork-based games that's been out in a while, because you really cannot pull the lone wolf Rambo in that game, because it's not only going to basically sodomize you, but it's going to harm your teammates as well. And that's pretty much all I've been playing, so that wraps up what we've been playing. Let's move on to our debate topic. I kind of sprung this debate topic on these guys at the last second, although it's going to be interesting because I know neither of them on our podcast have voiced an opinion about it. Basically, I'm going to bring up the subject of piracy. Today, if you missed it, the latest Jimquisition on Destructoid was about piracy. You can call me what you want, but basically Sterling and I agree on it. I don't care if you pirate. I really don't. But don't give me the excuses and the rationalizations for why you do it. You're pirate, fine. Just admit it and be done with it. So, but you fine listeners of the show have heard me say that 1,000 times. So let's get a couple fresh opinions on it. John, what's your take on piracy in general? Do you have a stance? Do you have a side? Take it from there.
Well, I can't say that it doesn't bother me that people pirate so much. It's just that me personally, I don't. Every one of my games I purchase, and but you know, that being said, I am aware of the cost of games, so I do just about every time we'll try to buy games on the cheap in some form or fashion, whether that be on sale or wait a while for the price to go down. I don't usually trade games in. I like to keep my collection as it is, unless it's something that I really didn't enjoy. But you know, I know somebody who had one of those DS R4 cards, and she must have had 40, 50 games on that thing. And boy, this makes me shake my head. So, you know, some of those games didn't sell well and didn't get the, you know, they get to have sequels and that kind of thing, where, you know, were probably very much deserved. And that part of it bothers me, that good games don't get bought, because, you know, part of the reason anyway might be because people pirated that game. It's not much of a, it's not a very strong opinion though, but for me, no, I don't pirate.
No, it was perfect, because I've got a follow up that kind of ties into what you were talking about. Glacinator, what's your thoughts on scurvy pirates and all the pirating they do?
Well, I personally don't pirate. And the reason is one that I've talked about, actually on the very first episode that I came on, when we were talking about hard disks versus, like, just having it on your system or on the computer. And I like having hard copies of stuff, which is what I said. And I don't like having games just on my computer. Like, it took a lot for me to get into Steam and Minecraft and games like that, because I don't have something that I can hold in my hand, a disc saying that, like, this is the game, like, and I can lose it in the real world rather than on the virtual world. And so I don't pirate for that reason. But if you pirate, I'm not going to hate on you. Pirating is wrong. It's what, you know, I don't know how to say this, but I mean, I have friends that pirate, but I'm not, like, mad at them or anything. I will admit though, I did pirate World of Goo, and when 2D Boy had that deal that said you can buy for any price, I was encouraged to buy for that full price. So I do feel good that I did that though.
Okay, so that leads me to kind of a second part of the question, and actually, John, you kind of hit on it. Jim makes the point in his video of this is eventually going to be detrimental to the industry itself, especially with World of Goo having like a 90% piracy rate, all the games that were pirated on the DS. Do you think that piracy is getting bad enough it'll eventually affect or be detrimental to the gaming industry?
Well, personally, I think that I just don't know whether piracy on a console like your Xbox and stuff is modding your Xbox that widespread right now. I know there's always Wii homebrew channels coming down and new exploits coming down, but I mean I don't think Joe Blow's six pack is really modding their Xboxes and that often. I mean, I think the PC gaming scene has been affected really badly by piracy, and it's taken changes like Steam and their way of going about having great sales and making it more attractive to buy digitally and spend your money that way rather than hunting down, ripped games and that kind of thing. But the handheld market, I think it will affect that a lot, because if you just look at the difference in price between, say, iPhone games and DS games, or coming down the pipes, the 3DS games and PSP2 games, I mean, those things are going to be $30, $40, $50. I mean, when you're competing against $6 games and $10 games and $1 games, I just don't know if those things, I mean, as soon as somebody finds out a way to rip a 3DS game, I think it's gone, personally.
Glacinator, what is your take on it eventually being detrimental? The PC market is really kind of the main PC and handheld. Is really kind of who's taking it the hardest right now, but do you think it'll be detrimental to the industry overall at some point?
At some point, of course, but I don't know if I can see that far down the line where it will affect the console market as well. I mean, of course you have homebrew on the Wii and whatnot, but I don't know how long it'll be until whole systems are just ripped from completely. But like John said, with the PC market and the handheld market, it's getting pretty ridiculous. And Nintendo with the 3DS is going through all these efforts to make it like pirate proof. And I keep seeing all these articles that's like, no pirate will ever be able to get in here ever. This thing has like 5 layers of protection. But it will be a problem for sure eventually to the industry as a whole. And they will, and we will have to do something about it.
Okay, now you have these two fine gentlemen's take on piracy. You've heard me yammer on it about it enough. I am not clean in regards to piracy, but at the same time, I think it is theft. And that I think eventually, in certain segments of the gaming industry, it's going to do irreparable damage. Just look at PC, like John said. But there you have it. That's been our debate topic. It's time for Survivor Man G. He has sent us more questions, stranded in his parts unknown with his monkey Diddy. Take it away, Survivor Man G.
Under pod security interface detection online. External message probe detected. System analysis detects sender G. Data analyzed. Prepare for audio playback.
What's up, WonderPod crew? Survivor Man G here. Man, what a treat. I can't believe you tracked down my five-time removed cousin Audio Master G. It was so good to hear the voice of family, who I haven't seen in what feels like ages. It would have been at the send-off before I launched into space on the asteroid analysis mission that went to shit. I hope they're not too worried and have some assurance that I'm in good health here in parts unknown. Not a lot has changed since I last wrote. Diddy is still chilling with me and the other monkeys. I keep watching the skies for a sign of intelligent life, but alas, I fear I'm stuck. Well, the last time we spoke, I had made some progress with the computer via the coconut. I'm still at a loss at what to do next. On a positive note, I made it down to the beach and took a little swim. A funny thing happened as I felt a squirmy scale thing literally jump into my hand. I pulled the sucker out of the water. Can you dig it? Turns out a fish had made a suicide swim right at me, so I chucked it towards the beach and collected my prize. Then I pierced a stick through it and had me a little barbecue. Now, this fish's fatal mistake made me think a little about the Darwin Awards, if you will. The distraction of portable entertainment devices like MP3 players and cellular and digital phones, and especially handheld video game systems, bring risks with them for users not paying attention. I came across an article about a 10-year-old Italian kid who became so focused on his PSP game that it is reported he wandered along a subway platform in Milan and fell onto the tracks. Luckily for this little gamer, an off-duty police officer made the save and the kid is alright. Back when I wasn't stranded in snow-infested Calgary, Alberta, Canada, just about every year you'd hear a story about somebody getting hit by a sea train while listening to headphones and not looking to where they were going. I'm sure everyone out there has heard a few stories similar to these in relation to portable devices. So I guess what I am getting at is this. Do you think society in general will adapt to the prevalence of portable high technology and measures of safety protocol, preventative technologies or laws, and whatnot? If so, do you feel we have seen some of these already in place? Or is this just something that will remain a result of people doing stupid and dangerous things while using such devices? Feel free to expand or comment on this in any way that you like. Wow, this has been a long one, so I'm gonna go see if I can catch me another fish. Survivor Man G, signing off.
Audio signal no complete.
Hey, Survivor Man G, how's it going? Glad to hear you're still doing okay and everything. Good. I'm glad you got that fish. Reminds me of fish fries here in New Orleans. All right, G. So in terms of your question, I think the best way for me to start this off is to talk about me being on a college campus. When I'm walking around campus, I see people all the time on their iPhones, texting people, whatnot. And I've seen a few close calls with people walking in the street pretty much and then them looking up at the last second and seeing a car whiz by. And I can't say that I haven't done that at some point either, changing music on my iTouch when I'm walking into art class or something. Whether or not society will adapt to it, society usually adapts to most things in some way or another, whether we as humans adapt through some type of change or whether we have to put things in place to make sure that we don't become hurt. We will find a way to fix this some way. So yeah.
John, what are your thoughts on Survivor Man G's question?
I think G's got a good question. I do think, as a direct answer to his question, do I think society in general will adapt? Yes, I think it will. And just like Lysander said, something will come into place, I'm sure. I mean, people have seatbelts because they drive too fast, you know. But as far as technology goes, like so often I hear technology being blamed for these kinds of things when I think people need to take some responsibility, right? Like, the kid nearly falling on the track. So that's, you know, I'm glad the kid wasn't hurt. But, you know, where was his mother or father to stop him from being so careless, you know, on a subway platform, for God's sake, you know? I'll tell you a little story. I was having a chat with my uncle and my aunt one day, and they were telling me about this news story they heard about some poor woman who got gang raped and some guy had a phone and videotaped this thing and put it on YouTube or something. And then the first response was, oh, technology's gone, it's just too far. Like, people seeing that kind of stuff. And geez, the responsible people are the people doing the bloody gang rape, right? It's not technology's fault. It's people have to look up from their handheld device, their phone, you know, people texting while they're driving. People are just being dumb. And, you know, the kid could have been reading a book, walking down, you know, looking at Curious George walking down the subway ramp and then falling there. It's not technology's fault. It's people's fault. And again, to answer his question, yeah, it's people will adapt. Society will adapt to He mentions the Darwin Awards, I think, in his message there. It's the same thing, keeping people from being dumb and killing themselves.
John hits it right on the head. That's exactly how I feel. As a matter of fact, in my mind, Survivor Man G, how we adapt is survival of the fittest. Now, meaning enough of these idiots get run over by subway trains, their genetic code will be out of the gene pool, and we won't have to worry about this problem. That's a little harsh. I understand. It tends to be a pet peeve of mine because I don't know whether I just look like somebody who needs to be bumped into or because of my height and size, I don't notice these yo-yos coming as fast as often. But I was at a trade show a couple weeks back, standing conspicuously off to the side, complete as much as I could be, waiting for some friends of mine to get done in this booth. I had four people, two male, two female, so it was a perfect survey group, bump into me because they're on their phones. Here's the crazier part. This was at a convention of cattle ranchers and agriculture people, not exactly the most high-tech folks in the world. So if I had four bump into me there because they're not paying attention, you can imagine what my trips to the mall are like. And so it really annoys me because it's like, really? You're walking down the street. You can't wait until you get to the corner to Facebook your friend that funny joke you just heard or whatever other crap you're doing. John's got it right. I'm not going to go off big time on a rant because it wouldn't do anybody any good because people need to take responsibility for what they're doing with their, electronic devices. Kids to a certain extent, especially the really young ones, I'll give a somewhat of a pass because their parents should be teaching them that it's not okay to run around at 100 miles an hour in Walmart with a DS. Again, due to my height, children of the age of, say, 4 and under are the perfect size to hit me in a spot. I don't like being hit by anybody. So, small child running around in Walmart with a DS playing it, it really kind of tends to set me off. But yeah, I mean, we will adapt. We have to. It doesn't seem like we adapt and progress due to the best of society or for the best of society. It seems that we adapt and progress to protect the dumbest in society sometimes. So there you go, Survivor Man G. That's the first part of your question. The second part of his question, Glacinator, have you seen anything in place to save people from falling on things with their handhelds?
not that I can think of besides, rails in places. No.
John, how about you? I really haven't either.
Not so much in the walking part of it, but I mean, at least, you know, here, where I live, driving with a cell phone or texting a cell phone while driving is a ticketable offense. I mean, that's about the biggest thing you can do to stop someone from doing it. And I mean, I can't imagine texting while I'm driving, but you know, people do it. I see it all the time.
I want to ask you this. We'll take this off the rail a little bit because it's illegal here in California too.
Mm-hmm.
And I still see morons doing it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's usually the people who barely can handle driving without any added distractions, mm-hmm. if you get my drift. It doesn't seem like the law has done anything here. Has it done any better in Canada?
Well, it's debatable. All I can really say is that, the law is in place, but whether or not, I wish I could give you a statistic to say how many how many tickets for cell phone use while driving there were given out last year here in St. John's, but I really couldn't say. I just know it's there. Society's reaction,
It's interesting here in New Orleans because they just put a new law in last year. I don't know if it's just for New Orleans or for Louisiana, but if you're a new driver, the first year that you're driving, if you're on your phone at all and they pull you over, I don't know how they would know that you're a new driver, but if you're a new driver and you get pulled over and you're on your phone, you get your license taken away for a period of time, which seems sort of ridiculous, but it does help to establish that you shouldn't be on your phone while you're driving, which is ridiculous though, because you're not texting, you're calling someone, but I understand what they're doing.
Well, the problem is the distraction. I think that's the same here in California. And I don't know if they do it in Louisiana, but here you have a different kind of license until you're the age 18. Now, they didn't do it when I was 16, thank God. And so it does teach them the behavior, but the problem is either of them are a distraction.
Yeah.
And I just don't see the point. All my friends, family, coworkers, whoever know that if I do not pick up my phone, leave me a voicemail because I'm driving, I'm working and don't want to talk to you, don't want to break my concentration for what I'm doing, or I'm just not answering my bloody phone. You know, partially with tying in Survivor Man G's question, we've become this instant getcha society, and there are some places where I'm just still going to say no. Like my car. My car is my quiet place. I'm not answering a phone. I don't care. Well, you should get a Bluetooth headset. No, I shouldn't. It's just my quiet place.
Yeah, I applaud that. I mean, geez, I didn't even have a cell phone. Less than 10 years ago. I mean, what do people do before that? You know.
I don't know.
There's a lot of things that I mean, Glacinator's the youngest among us. I mean, some of these concepts of not having it are foreign to him. I mean, to me, yeah, I'm like you. I was like you, John, until I absolutely needed it. And now I like it when I'm traveling and when I'm doing, you know, when I'm working by myself. You know, it is nice to have if something happens. But, oh, yeah. but it's a nuisance other times.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if either of you caught the Super Bowl commercial where they showed the kid update, checking his Facebook status in his new Chevy car.
No, I didn't see that.
I wanted to smash my TV with a baseball bat. It's like, no. And the funny thing was my Twitter feed, which has a mix of journalists and game producers and just people that I follow. Amazingly, my Twitter feed, if you took that as a poll, it was a survey of nerds, were pretty much in the same boat as I was. They're like, no, that's too far.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, thank you, Survivor Man G. Glad to see you're doing okay in parts unknown. Maybe one of these days your five-time removed cousin will fish you out of there. Until then, keep sending us questions. All right, let's move on to news. Since these guys are, you know, like I said, not the normal crew, we're gonna kind of run through it at possibly a little faster rate. And actually, both these guys are handheld guys. So this first story, which comes to us from computerandvideogames.com, is a good one. Reggie Fils-Aimé, president of Nintendo, was talking about how basically they're damned if they do and damned if they don't when it comes to the 3DS launch lineup. Now, personally for me, even though I'm probably not going to get a 3DS, the thought of Pilot Wings and Kid Icarus just makes me giddy like a little schoolgirl. But people are actually, once I went and researched it, bitching that there's no instant Mario and Zelda. John, do you agree with Phil and me? Are they kind of damned if they do, damned if they don't? And what do you think of the 3DS launch lineup?
I think Reggie's got a point in terms of, I mean, Nintendo's got this brand name where they, you know, there's the people who are loyal to Nintendo, the hardcore guys are just, you know, they want that Mario game at launch. I mean, we had it on the NES, we had it on the SNES, you know, it's inbred in our minds to have a Mario game at launch of a new system, I guess. You know, the Wii was different, but still, you know, it's still, when I got my Wii, I wished there had been a Mario game, I'll admit that. And I got mine on launch day. But as far as the lineup goes, it's okay. Pilot Wings is very cool. I thought I heard Kid Icarus was pushed back till June. Is that right? But
possibly this story doesn't. Yeah, possibly, but this story has it as being launch.
Oh, okay. Well, so. There you go. We'll leave it at that then. But it's a pretty good lineup, but it's not something that I'm going to run out and buy a 3DS on launch day. I'll tell you that.
Okay, now we move to the big Nintendo fanboy. Apparently I greatly underestimated how much Mario and Zelda is loved, and even I have a grasp of the concept. So Glacinator, are you butthurt that they're not going to be out for a few months, or are you happy with the launch lineup?
I am not happy with the launch lineup, but I'm not going to hate on Nintendo for having the launch lineup they have. I want to play Ocarina of Time on my 3DS as soon as possible. I want to play Mario Kart as soon as possible. But I understand the reasons why a company may have to push certain objectives or items back at a later date to make more profit or increase funds at a later time. I understand that. So while I am disappointed in the launch lineup, I'm not mad at Nintendo for having that lineup. And I think that the way I feel is the way that a lot of people should feel, and if a lot of people did feel my way, things would be a lot better, and there'd be a lot less griping on all fans in general.
Well, it's gamers. You're never going to stop the griping.
Yes, we're gamers. We whine. That's what we do.
So you agree with Reggie that they're basically screwed no matter what they do.
That goes with any company or anywhere.
See, as much as I love Zelda and Mario, and I was not a born and bred console gamer, as the audience knows, I started my tenure on Amiga and PC. I really loved Kid Icarus and Pilot Wings, so it's kind of maybe I'm that target demographic they were hoping for. although I don't plan on buying a 3DS at launch, maybe on down the line. But yeah, basically, these guys covered it great. They're screwed no matter what they do. I think it's actually what Glace and I were saying is smart marketing wise to kind of hold it back, you know, and kind of keep it in. And then once the 3DS sells, you know, not only will both Ocarina of Time and whichever Mario one they throw out there, not only will they sell great numbers, but it'll probably also pick up the 3DS unit numbers. So I think pretty much Reggie has it right. They're damned if they do and damned if they don't. And we'll just see how the 3DS does.
Okay,
I'll just say real quick. I don't always agree with Nintendo, but I don't doubt their business strategies.
John, go ahead.
I was just going to say, Nintendo are known, when it comes to Mario and Zelda games, Nintendo is known for their quality. I know there's a scheduling reason so they don't, they want to hold off the Mario one to when it's a better time, but if it's a matter of fine tuning and making it a great game, I have no problem with that at all. That doesn't bother me in the slightest. When the DS first launched, I mean, they had Mario 64 DS on there, and I don't think I'd want to see a rehashed, Mario Sunshine on the 3DS. No thanks.
That'd be awesome. What are you talking about?
No, Sunshine was okay, but it wasn't great.
I won't get into that.
Well, you're the purist, man. You're the purist, and yeah. I think that's all I wanted to say.
Well, Glacinator's got it right. Way back to 2007 when I first moved back to California and Lord help the rest of the world, I got a good internet connection again. I wrote a piece on the Destructoid community blog defending the Wii, and I didn't even own a console yet. Because Nintendo's marketing strategy was brilliant. Let Sony and Microsoft fight it out, button heads like two rams in the Rocky Mountains. We'll sell buttloads to kids because that's what we've always done. So, like Glacinator, I'm not going to doubt their marketing strategy with this 3DS. I think they'll be okay. They're not probably going to lose any sleep or be living in cardboard boxes anytime soon, would be my guess. Our next story, and one that I'm using partially as an example to prove even I can swallow my pride and agree with somebody I'm not particularly fond of. It comes to us from computerandvideogames.com again. The headline is Blazinski, Violent Games Critics, Flatter Industry. Now, if you don't know who that is, it's Cliffy B, and we all know how much I'm not a huge fan of Cliffy B. But he was being interviewed for something, and here, let me get to the exact meat of the story. When asked about the prospect of Bulletstorm being an obvious target for the Anti-Violence League, Blazinski told CVG, "You know, the violence in the game, the language, and all those issues are issues. On one hand, I've always found that very scary that people are attacking the industry. But on the other hand, I found it somewhat flattering because it's one of those situations where the fact that people think, ooh, big scary video games are ruining the world. I guess that means we're the new rock and roll, the new Elvis, the new Dungeons and Dragons, the new moving pictures." Brilliant, by the way, saying moving pictures. And so on and so forth. Yes, Cliffy, you're right. I hate that, but he is. He's absolutely right. Here's the thing. Ladies and gentlemen, if you haven't listened to it, go back and grab, I don't know, it's somewhere in episode 1 through 10, and I probably did it all the way up to 15. I said this. I'm just not Cliff Bleszinski, so I don't get the press. I've said this for a long time, that this is just our turn in the barrel. It happened for me with rock music. You know, Tipper Gore and the PMRC gonna just destroy heavy metal because it's ruining kids. I got grounded for having a couple metal albums that I wasn't supposed to have, you know. So, I mean, Cliffy's got it right, as far as I'm concerned. Glacinator, do you agree? Is it kind of flattering because this means that we're kind of growing up, we're becoming a more mature medium because they're actually taking notice of us?
Let me tell you what I put in my high school yearbook underneath my graduation picture. We each get a quote to put underneath our picture to say whatever you want. And I chose a quote from Miyamoto. It's one of my favorite quotes. It goes, video games are bad for you. That's what they said about rock and roll. And I think that sums it up right there.
Yeah, I mean, it's, but do you think that that means that the industry is getting a little more mainstream? Because we are being treated like, okay. Well, I wanted to hear
it. No doubt about it.
Yeah. John, do you feel the same way? Is this kind of, we're just going to have to ride this out, and then we'll eventually get, like, movies and TV where we can get away with anything? Or the industry can?
I'll tell you, I was watching an episode of The Muppet Show with my son the other day, and it was the Alice Cooper episode. And Sam the Eagle came on there, and he told Alice Cooper that I think that you're a sick, twisted degenerate. And Alice Cooper said, thank you. Alice Cooper has been around successful for a long, long time. And, you know, think about Marilyn Manson. How many albums has that guy sold? Just on just pure shock value and the press and how much outrage there is against him. That's what, you know, obviously that's what Cliffy B is tapping into. I think flattery is a good word to use. And, yeah, he's absolutely right.
To do a kind of a second part of the question, you know, we had a huge problem with Jack Thompson a while back. He's since been disbarred and sent to an old folks home. That's my story and I'm sticking to it. when he was a royal pain in the behind of the game industry, there was this huge debate of whether we should defend ourselves or whether we should just put up with it because of what we just talked about. It's just our turn in the barrel, so to speak. John, do you think now with some of these further attacks, which if you notice, Bulletstorm was accused of causing rape by the lovely knuckleheads at Fox News the other day. How bullets cause rape, I still don't know, but somebody will explain it to me. Do you think we should defend the industry against that, or as gamers, as press, as the industry, or should we just kind of ride it out and it'll be over eventually?
I think there's nothing wrong with standing up for your industry and defending what you do as an industry. But I do think there is definitely a lot of riding it out. You gotta watch it. I mean, there are some radicals out there that will try to put it down. You know, like you brought up, Tipper Gore and the Twisted Sister singer. What's his name again?
Dee Snider?
Dee Snider, yeah. I mean, Dee stood up for, I mean, he came in and he showed how well spoken and well articulated, how well articulated people in heavy metal can be. I mean, there's so many games out there that are beautiful that, you know, you could call art, right? I mean, the argument has to be that gaming is so much more than shooting a guy in the ass with a bullet, you know. that's what I think. But you know, you can't come back at these people who are arguing against games because of the violence with just, name calling, so to speak. But it's a matter of showing, you know, rising above those critics and their, you know, their flat accusations.
Glacinator, do you agree with John? Do you think we should just write it out? What's your take on the people who do attack the industry or us as gamers?
There are times where we should write it out and not say anything, but then there are also times where you do need to stand up for this industry and what it does try to bring as a whole. Every time a new concept or idea, or such as the gaming industry is formed, created, there will always be someone to oppose that new idea or think that it's wrong. And over time, usually, most of the time, it becomes assimilated. And right now we're at that time where people are still unsure of what the industry stands for, what we try to do, what we bring to the table. And it's just going to take time. And while we do have to sit there and take it, we do need to establish ourselves as a industry, as a power, as I sound like I'm trying to raise people to rise with me to take over something, but it's important to stand up for what you believe in.
These gentlemen said it as well as I could, but I will enter one caveat. There are some experts and some knuckleheads who have made such buffoons of themselves that while I probably wouldn't do it personally, I do think that screwing with them doesn't hurt our cause as much as some people do. I think overall showing that we're an articulate and well-spoken and well-behaved industry is good. There comes a tipping point where certain people need to be messed with a little bit. You know, if they prove themselves to be too staunch and too opposed to any debate or discussion about the topic and just wants to attack us ad hominem, you know, then I think those people are fair game for some of the, let's call it the seedier side of gaming and electronics folks. I'm sure you can think of who I'm talking about, or possibly you have ideas of your own. In our last story, this comes to us from Destructoid.com. Basically, it's a concept that I've always thought was very true and kind of just condensed into a statement from High Voltage CEO Eric Nofsinger. If you don't know who High Voltage is, they did Conduit and The Grinder. Basically, his take is that this notion that you have to sell a million games for it to be considered success is preposterous. And as long as you sold enough games to cover your costs, then it is a success. And that eventually this notion that you have to sell millions or far more than it costs you to produce the game is actually going to end up hurting the industry. Glacinator, do you agree with Mr. Nofsinger that we kind of gotten out of hand with how many games have to be sold for a game to be considered a success?
Yeah, there's no specific amount that you can say you have to sell this much, then it's a good game. There's no way that you can say that. There are so many games that are great and they don't get discovered until later on. Sleeper hits. I can't think of one right now, but there are tons of sleeper hits out there. And
Psychonauts.
Psychonauts. That's excellent point. I love that game. It barely sold. It didn't sell that much, but now people are playing it all the time when it came out on a Xbox Live arcade and everything. So you can't say that a game has to sell this much to be good.
John, do you agree with Mr. Nofsinger? And it is. There's a lot of people that go, well, it did sell a million.
Yeah. Go ahead. Sorry.
Do you agree with him? And it's kind of silly, and we need to get away from it.
Yeah, I agree with him 100%. It's really the opinion that you need to sell so many copies is really a reflection on how big the industry has gotten. I mean, just look at how many oodles of Wii Fit games that have been sold, or Halo games. I mean, it just keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger, and that bar keeps getting set higher and higher. And it's hard to measure up to those things. But when he's talking about, you know, profit versus cost, from a business side, I guess it makes total sense. I mean, if you've covered your cost, you can make another. I mean, you're making a living off this, right? I mean, a game that has popped in my head, you're talking about cult hits or whatever. I mean, look at Prince of Persia. I mean, that started out as The Sands of Time didn't sell all that great, but then it did well, but it had such a following that it just build and build and build. And, you know, Prince of Persia is a household term right now. You know, there's been a movie, there's, you know, and games keep coming out for that. But yeah, as long as a developer can cover its costs and keep putting out the games, it's too bad they don't sell the millions of a Red Dead Redemption or, I mean, look at, you know, Alan Wake came out, the same day as Red Dead Redemption. And Alan Wake didn't do, you know, nearly as well as it really should have. That was in my top five games of last year. And, I hope they cover their costs. I would love to see another more in the Alan Wake series.
Let's go with that though. Okay, so you got the business, you know, the business side of it, cost versus expense. But is there a point where we could use sales numbers in a quantitative way to say, okay, this is probably never going to see a sequel, or is it too dynamic a situation to say?
Yeah, it's the industry, like the bar for the industry in terms of what's a success or not is just way too high for, you know, I think to you know, you see those top 10 numbers on the NPDs, you don't see them so much now, but from when they were out before, you know, the top 10s were just millions and millions of sellers. And Nintendo games that are, you know, the evergreen games that does last forever. It's, you know, you don't see below that number 10 or number 20, and, you know, how can you tell when you don't know what the cost was?
Glycinator, do you agree? Is there some way we can use these numbers to determine if a game was actually a success, or is it kind of just gotten out of hand now?
As I said before, there is no number that you can put specifically. I mean, there might be a way, through some business, I say no. I'm just gonna say no.
Well, here's what I do. Game I was really, really hyped into, one of the few was, last year, that's an easy one, was Medal of Honor. It came out squashed in between COD and Halo. So it got hammered. I think that the game was good enough to do better if it had been released, say in a different time period. So I think sometimes when you're looking at like what Jonathan's talking about with the top 10, well, if the top 10 in sales for a given period, say 6 months or something, or let's just do 2 months to make it easy. If it's all Halo, Mario, COD, all well-known franchises, I think as somebody in a game studio, you kind of need to throw that out because you screwed yourself by releasing your game in that time period. So you need to look at games that came out in the same time period as yours that are fresh IPs or that are relatively unknown releases. Trying to find a quantitative number when you're a smaller unknown studio versus somebody like Activision or EA or whatever is kind of ridiculous. But to close this story out, actually, I want to ask you guys one other thing. Given these kind of sales numbers and you got to sell a million, this and that, one of my biggest gripes that kind of ties in here has been developers need to pay a little more attention to when they're releasing these games. So games like Medal of Honor don't get squashed in between Halo and COD. Jonathan, do you think we're going to start to see that? Do you think people are going to start being more choosy about when they release their games to get them the maximum amount of exposure? I mean, we do have 365 days in a year, not spring and Christmas.
Yeah, exactly. I think we're already seeing it. I mean, of course, you know, there is the November, December rush, but you know, you're seeing more and more games being released during the summer and earlier in the year. I mean, Mass Effect 2 came out in January, and you know that, you know, for me included, and a lot of people, that was the number one game of the year. Came out in January, right? Again, I'll use my Alan Wake example. That came out the same day as Red Dead. I think that was in August, and I mean, they must have thought then that that was a safe place to put it. A new IP, you know, all that kind of great stuff. But Red Dead, you know, that's a sequel to Red Dead Revolver, but, you know, who bought Red Dead Revolver, right? Not very many people, I don't think. And so, you know, I agree with you. It's a challenge to know when to release something, even when you've got, you know, what seems to be an even playing field in other parts of the year. I think it's a very difficult thing to figure out.
Well, and I'll give the, like, I don't give EA or DICE any slack at all for being that stupid. They tried to market a game that was nothing like COD and Halo against COD and Halo in mm-hmm. the form of Medal of Honor. It was Battlefield mixed in with some other stuff, really. So that was kind of EA's own dumb fault, and they got what they deserved. The Alan Wake guys, on the other hand, that they couldn't have saw that coming from a mile away.
No way, no way.
Because Red Dead Redemption was a great game. I loved it. And I'm not a huge fan of Grand Theft Auto. As a matter of fact, I hardly can ever get through one because it's not a well-structured enough open world. You know, you can have an open world with better structure and it's more fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I loved Red Dead Redemption. I mean, I thought the story was great, how they kept to the period weapons, everything they did. Yeah, it was still open world, but it was an open world you could function in, yeah. You know. And it caught me by surprise. I bought it because, and I'm repeating this audience because John doesn't know, I grew up on a cattle ranch. I'm mm-hmm. part nerd, part cowboy. So I kind of, that appealed to me. It's like, wow, I had not since Call of Juarez or whatever that was. I haven't tried a cowboy game. Well, we'll give it a shot, you know, because I'm not huge into survival horror, so Alan Wake wasn't for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I was stunned by how good Red Dead Redemption was. So point being that long of a story, I'll kind of give the developers for poor Alan Wake a pass because nobody saw that. I don't think anybody saw that.
Well, there was a couple of really good racing games that came out that day too. I think Split Second and what was that other one? The Mario Kart, like
one that Disney made.
Blur. Both of those came out that day too, I think, or really close to Red Dead, and that they couldn't have seen that coming. I mean, Red Dead just took off like a bullet. Pardon the pun, Oh, I didn't see it coming.
As much as I don't like what it did to Alan Wake, well, you know, we got to have more sympathy for the Alan Wake developers because that was just one of those one in a million train wrecks.
Yeah.
You know, I felt bad for them. Like that when I was perusing the sales numbers the next couple months, you know, couple months later, it's like it just wasn't their day.
No.
Which I hope somebody gives them enough funding. And that they have they have the confidence to do it. Cause I know Alan Wake was a good game.
Mm-hmm. Well, they need to go cross platform. They can't just stick with Xbox. They're going to have to go just to spread the wealth a bit, you know, just to bring in more people. Now to Microsoft's credit, they're starting to bundle Alan Wake in with their Xboxes, but.
Well, that's good.
Yeah. Well, that's something, right?
Yeah. We don't need to take the show completely on a tangent, but yeah, the whole exclusive thing.
Yeah.
Just Cliff Notes version kind of tends to tee me off anyway. Glacinator, do you think we're going to ever see a day where the developers are getting smarter about picking and choosing or like John said, has it already kind of happened due to sales numbers?
I don't think that there's a way that you can decide when to release a game or not because there's just too many variables involved. I mean, of course, there are ways to take precautions to make sure that your game will sell. I mean, you're not going to release it on the same day as Halo 3. I don't know if either of you guys have seen Mega 64's Cabela's parody.
No, I haven't.
No. Well, it's a parody. It's a Cabela's hunting game, and it came out the same day as Halo 3, and they're just parodying the developers of Cabela for being so stupid to release it on the same day as Halo 3. So while there are precautions to make sure your game sells, there really is no way to say, like, okay, this is the best date for this game. Because you don't know what could possibly come out. It may look like the suckiest game ever, but it may be the most awesome game. So there's just too many variables.
But I do, Glacinator brings up a good point, although Cabela's hunting games are niche, so I don't think they cared if it was out with Halo, because they're audience was going to buy it specifically because it was a Cabela's hunting game.
True, but
yeah, but no, that. it is a good parody. I think it's going to be key for developers, especially ones trotting out new IPs, to wait until they see all the big guns for that year. We know enough in advance these days when the next COD is going to be out, when the next Halo, when the next this, when the next that, you know, because there's really no excuse for trotting out a new IP, EA, and trying to cram it between COD and Halo. It's just that I think we can correct. The rest of it, you guys are absolutely right. It's just too many variables. So I think that's pretty much it, gentlemen. Unless you got anything else, I'm going to attempt to do Patrick's spiel and get us out of here.
If I could just say one more thing, I mean,
sure.
A new IP, I mean, that came out at a great time. I remember was the first BioShock. You know, that came out. Look it up real quick. That came out in August on 360 when it first debuted. And, you know, I mean, look how heralded BioShock is and how huge it's become. You know, BioShock 2, BioShock Infinite's coming out, in the future sometime. And it's just so influential. You know, everybody is, as far as I know, has played BioShock, and so many games are influenced by it. Picking that date to get it out there in the public consciousness is, just to reiterate, is just so critical.
That did help them a lot, but that game was so solid. That was actually the last major AAA title I bought on PC before I got my 360.
Mm-hmm.
That game was so good that while it was definitely smart to put it in August, I think it would have done well enough to spawn spawn the whole franchise.
Well, it's true, but when that game came out, I mean, there was nothing else. Like, there was nothing else to talk about other than BioShock. And
there wasn't.
That's a beautiful thing to be able to have in your pocket when you're putting out a high quality game.
Well, like I said, hopefully that whether it's a big time dev or one trying to break in, they'll start looking at August and September and you know, July, kind of the dog months of summer when people, because I know usually in June and July, and like first part of January, although that seems to be changing now. That's usually when I'm cleaning up my back catalog or finishing games I haven't finished because something else came along.
Exactly.
You know, usually the summer months, usually like June, July, and August. So, I mean, those months, I just hope because new IPs that deserve some spotlight, like Alan Wake, to a lesser extent, Medal of Honor. There's been others that just got trampled because the devs didn't think about it. I just hope that in future, at least for new IPs, like Glacinator said, and I think you said it too, John, there's just too many variables. There's nothing you can do.
Just don't put it out in November.
Yeah, exactly. November, December. And that has been news. Okay, well, Patrick's not here, and if I skipped his little marketing segment altogether, he'd probably scream at me when he gets home from wherever he's at. So basically, ladies and gentlemen, you know now that we have a website. It's wonderpodonline.com. That's wonderpodonline, all one word, .com. We also have a Facebook under the same name. I know, we're not very original. Patrick does YouTube videos. They're basically short clips of these shows in video format. Check those out on YouTube. Search WonderPod. I don't know how he does this every week because you're just saying WonderPod over and over again. We've become this thing. It's almost like troll dolls. what else is there? We're on Twitter. There's a bunch of us on Twitter. Some of us have personal Facebook accounts. Go read John's writing at sidequesting.com. And if all that fails you, we do have an email address. It is wonderpodonline@gmail.com. wonderpodonline@gmail.com. And until episode 52, I am Bruce McGee, and I am out of here to find something to eat. See ya.
Bye.
Cheers.